82nd Street in Brooklyn, and grandma, and grandma and all her sons, all my uncles, who were a great influence on my life, all in different ways, okay, lived on the bottom floor, okay, and me, my father, mother, and two brothers lived on the third floor, okay, oh. Like second, fourth floor.
Where was your father's family from?
I'm going to say Naples. I was really influenced very much more by my mother's side, the Pellucci side. The Ferrara side were completely different than the Pellucci side. The Ferrara side were educated, disciplined, where the Pellucci side were more partiers and having a good time. And and so grandma would be down on the first floor, and she used to make the sauce. Okay, Sunday afternoon, all the uncles would come over. She had 11 children. One had passed away at that time, but whoever was in action was always coming on Sunday. And of course, my mother, who was very, very saintly, she would go to the rectory, the pastor, you know, cook for them and stuff like that, and clean up at the rectory at our parish. She was sort of the level-headed one, the voice of reason, because the rest of the guys, they were wild, okay? And my aunt, you know, remember the long table, okay, where we would sit on Sunday afternoons, and they'd bring the homemade pasta from Mulberry Street, from up in New York. And they would bring homemade pasta, it'd be the large table, all the uncles would be around it, and there would be, on this side of it, her baby grand piano, which I played, okay? And that's where I would practice and take my lessons from the Mr. Morvillo, with the table, and eventually in this red-blooded Italian family, because I'm the one that remembers, because I was the first grandchild. So there was nobody. So I remember all of these things happening, and invariably somebody get in an argument.
Oh yeah.
At the table, again, brothers and sisters. That's what it was, brothers and sisters. Yeah. And it'd be a beef.
Uh-huh.
Usually before the antipasto was finished. Okay. And my mother, of course, would try to be the peacemaker, but somebody would always walk out. And then during the week, mother would go and
bring them back,
and then next week the same. It might be two other brothers fighting, and you know? So my grandmother was a tremendous influence on me because she wanted me to play the piano, okay, because of that her friend's influence, okay. So I did, and being from Brooklyn and having absolutely no ear, I had no ear for the piano. I could sit down, and what I would do, it was strictly classical music.
Mm.
I would read it, memorize it, and play it, exactly the way Bach or Beethoven played it, okay? And you're in Brooklyn, a kid say, I want to hear Rock Around the Clock, I can't play it. it was more, I always say, sort of they wanted Van Cliburn, and I wanted Little Richard,
right?
You know, I wanted to be Little,
and
I was influenced by that. I remember my aunt, one of the daughters, and my godmother, okay, sent me to my first rock and roll show at the Brooklyn Paramount, Alan Freed's tribute to Start, and they were all these great, and the featured player was Little Richard, and I sat there, why can't I do that? And I couldn't, because I couldn't actually not play Happy Birthday by ear, so.
Wow.
And if Morvillo ever found any popular music in the house, he had the ruler, and he'd whack you. And I was strictly like the classical with the metropole and all that. But grandma was a great influence. My mother passed away when I was 17 years old, and grandma then moved into it. We had moved out of that neighborhood to another place, and she moved in. But she was at that time, I was ready to leave, because I was going to go away and play ball. And my brother and sister were more influenced later on, because they were 5 years younger than me, and they were at home, whereas I was gone. But she was the one who, like I said before, the sauces, that hallway, I remember in New York, it's a smell of that, because it kept it for 2 or 3 days.
My grandmother.
Yeah, it was a whole, we come down, and of course she had the bigger apartment, because upstairs we had a one bedroom with 5 people in it. Me, my mother, father, but for bunk beds, I was on the top, my brother and sister on the bottom. Okay. And I remember on steamy, hot nights, I'd sit up on a fire escape.
No air conditioning in those days.
No such thing as an air conditioning.
No.
In the beginning, no TV, nothing. Learned how to play on the streets. Stick ball, punch ball, and the like that. But the Italian ethnicity was there. My father took me to Avenue U, okay, which was which eventually I would go to school near Avenue U, Lafayette High School. But when I was young, and that's where I learned how to eat a lot of the ethnic foods, like gabuchel, which is the sheep's head, okay, the actual sheep's head. And he told me a story about, when the Italians came here, they were very poor, and the more affluent people would buy lamb, cut off the head and throw it out. And the Italians used to go into the garbage and pick up the head, and you have a baked gabuchel. They're absolutely fantastic. They have them in the oven and they put the breadcrumbs on the. It's a little fearsome looking, but it was wonderful. I learned how to eat that, scongili salads, all of the ethnic. More organs, tripe, and all made different ways. And
so did you grow up speaking Italian with your grandmother?
No, it's another funny school. She spoke perfect Italian, and I couldn't say a word until when I went to high school. I took Italian for 3 years. I still couldn't speak. It didn't matter.
Was it an Italian neighborhood?
Mostly Italian and Jewish.
Yeah.
The school was Italian and Jewish.
Brooklyn, yeah.
Almost completely Italian and Jewish. Yeah. And a lot of kids. We had 2,000 or 3,000 kids come in.
So when you got to play baseball, what did you have closer ties with other Italian American players or coaches, managers, or was that not?
Most of the kids, as I was in the sandlots, as I came up, most of the managers were Italian. Actually, at Lafayette High, where I went to school, almost the whole baseball team was Italian, and the whole basketball team was Jewish, and football team was a mixture of both.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it was an Italian Jewish neighborhood almost exclusively. That was it. That was the neighborhood. And you went over to somebody's house. Finally, when we got a TV, everybody came over to my house.
Exactly.
It didn't matter if you were Italian, you were Jewish, or what you had. And they watched. We watched the Jackie Gleason and all of the big songs of the Milton Berle of that era.
Yeah.
So we were a typical Italian family, and Grandma was the leader. My mother was the facilitator. I mean, she was the one that kept, sort of like the old statement, the glue, the glue to the family. When she passed, it sort of made some of the uncles and others didn't come over anymore.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same
after she
we had moved.
So when you were in the major leagues, what Italian ball players do you remember, or coaches or managers? Of course, there was Lasorda.
Well, Lasorda, a funny story about Lasorda is the first time I went to Vero Beach, Florida, that was my first year, and they used to have a big fence and a curfew and everything like that. And, of course, I was young and didn't care too much about the curfews and stuff. I remember coming in, had to climb over this fence, and at that time they had the scouts and the minor league managers roaming the ground with flashlights. So who nails me as I'm trying to used to be one window that we could, you know, the kid, the other players would leave open, so, and he could flash out, "Who are you?" And you know, I'm a rookie, and I don't hardly know who he is. And he says, and I said, "Al Ferrara." "Ferrara, you're Italian?" I said, "Yeah, I'm Italian." He said, "What the hell are you doing? You know, they can still send you home if you do things like this. You can't do things like that. You just can't do things like this. You got, you know, blah, blah, blah." He said, "I'm going to tell you what, you're Italian, I'm going to let you off this time. If I ever catch you again, I'm going to turn you in, and you, okay, thanks." Boom, I go up, and they pull me up into the window, and I go into the street. Now, about 4 years later, I make the big leagues. I'm sitting in a hotel in Los Angeles, and I get a phone call. And I say, "Hello, Al." He said, "Yes, it's Tommy Lasorda." "Hey, how you doing, Tommy?" He says, "You remember the time when I pushed you, when I didn't turn you in?" I said, "Yeah, Tommy, I really appreciate it. Hey, look, 4 years later, I'm here, I'm in the big league." He said, "You know what, that's great." He said, "You know, we got a Kiwanis Club, and I'm going to speak at it today. And I want you to come down, and I want you to speak. Would you do that for me?" I said, I'm not going to turn him. "Oh, sure, Tommy, no problem." Oh, we go down. About 2 weeks later, the phone rings again. "Al, yeah, Tommy was sort of, hey." He said, "You remember the time I let you in and we didn't get..." And I says, "Tommy, yeah, I remember the time." He said, "We're going to the Lions Club today." He said, "Would you mind speaking?" Still, I can't turn. So this happened four times. Because he's always out in the community.
Right.
He's a marvelous man in the community. Yeah. It happened four or five times. The fourth time, the fifth time he called, he said, "Remember, hey, Al, you remember the time?" He did the same thing every time. I'm sure he had his tongue in cheek. I said, "Can I curse on this thing?"
Sure.
I said, "Tom, I wish the fuck you would have turned me in. You know, I'm getting a little tired." He laughed like a son of a bitch. So that was my, Lasorda, of course, I roomed very briefly. Not roomed, I lived in the same building with Rocky Colavito. When he came for the Dodgers, I had broke my ankle. In 58, he came to the Dodgers, and I always admired Rocky Colavito as a terrific ball player. Of course, DiMaggio. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, he was just going out. Okay, but of course, I heard all these marvelous things about what a great player he was, and stuff like that. So DiMaggio was. Of course, an Italian in New York, okay, DiMaggio was the man, okay? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But these are those are the players. Of course, after me, Rico Petrocelli came out of Sheepshead Bay. John Franco came out of the same high school as I, at Lafayette High. My teammate at Lafayette High, okay, who went on to play in the big leagues, Bob Aspromonte.
Oh, sure.
And that little era of ours, for Italian kids to come out of the neighborhood and go to the big leagues, there was myself, the Aspromonte brothers, Joe Torre, and
Frank.
Joe Pepitone.
Yeah.
All came from the same time.
Yeah.
Now, Bobby and I went to the same high school. The other guys we played against in the Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
So and there were a lot of Italian American players in Brooklyn. Okay, never heard of, never played, never went away.
Sure.
Hey, in the summertime, your father said to go to work. Some of these guys, they couldn't practice; they had to go to work when the school was out. They couldn't play ball and everything like that. So the Italian American, and when you go back to the area where I went to school, if you went over this Avenue U, there was nothing but Italian restaurants, Italian delis, pizza parlor, and bars. Just a long walkway. And there's some of them are still there today, the place that I got my gobbled cell, okay, my father, that scungili cell where I learned how to eat them, still there. And they still got a picture up on the wall. It's a newspaper clipping of Joe Louis knocking out, getting when Marciano knocked him out.
Oh, right. Okay.